Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Studio G and the Discussions for Women in Leadership. We will continue our focus this week on how the styles and principles of an Omega leader can influence leaders and leadership. Here in the studio this week, we have author and speaker Lori Beth Jones, who has written 14 books, along with the book that we are using for this discussion for women in leadership, Jesus CEO. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you.
Representing the business pillar is Vicky Arteaga. Welcome, Vicky. Glad you're with us tonight again.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Elisa Holson, representing the education pillar. Welcome, Elisa.
Thank you, and good evening.
Good evening. There's a gorgeous moon on the horizon as I look out the window tonight. I don't know if you're watching and can see it, but it's illuminating on our focus on women in leadership. So that is so appropriate for this discussion tonight. These weekly shows on developing women in leadership have become a passion for each of us here at Studio G, and with Lori Beth, as we begin to walk into this new topic tonight about being passionately committed, can you kind of frame out for us again this week what it means to be an Omega leader and how you coined that phrase as you wrote the book?
Well, the two types of leadership most often talked about in business were the alpha style, which is alpha authoritarian, typically alpha male, alpha dog, the biggest, baddest, tallest, meanest, clearest, the one who takes charge and intimidates, usually operates through fear and intimidation. And then the beta style of leadership, which Peter Drucker made famous in working with the Japanese, which was the cooperative style of leadership, usually assimilated by females, or people think that it's a female style. So when I looked at Jesus, sometimes he was very alpha authoritative, and other times he was more beta cooperative. I decided that he really demonstrated the Omega style of leadership, which is, it's not an either or, it's and. Sometimes he was one, sometimes he was the other, but all of it was under the umbrella of answering to a higher authority, which was God, his Father. So in terms of asserting leadership, it has been shown that you will have more power if people understand that you answer to a higher authority. And it's people who stop answering to a higher authority that become the dictators and the oligarchs and all those other things. So that's how I came up with the definition of the Omega leader.
Excellent. Well, part of the reason for the invention of this show and the invention of future shows around this topic is that, particularly towards women, and our focus is around that, we feel that the Omega leadership style is really a style, a management style that we want to learn more about, incorporate in our leadership, either in education, in business, as we have these representatives here. So we're delighted to have the expert on the topic, and let us move then tonight into looking at another phrase that you've coined as a result of looking at an Omega leader and the characteristic of passionate commitment. How that showed up for you, Lori Beth, as you were writing and penning Jesus CEO as a leader.
Right. Well, I certainly didn't coin the phrase passionate commitment, but looking at Jesus again as a role model of a very effective leader, he demonstrated that in every action that he took. And I think that it's important for us to understand that passionate commitment is going to look different to different people. And as we've talked in other shows, and that, you know, based on my book, The Four Elements of Success, and the work I've done around the personality types of earth, water, wind, and fire, the elements, the people who are most likely to demonstrate passionate commitment in a visible way are your fire leaders, who will march into flames, and your winds, who know how to stir up excitement. So what happens is that many times the winds and fires will be demonstrating passionate commitment. And what is harder to see is the waters, their passionate commitment by disappearing themselves into the soil so that something can grow, or the earth, which is carrying the weight of the world literally and standing silently at their post without any fanfare, without any accolades, and yet if they were not the watchmen of the night, then we could be invaded. So I think it's very important to understand as a leader, when you are calling forth passionate commitment from your followers, that you be aware that it's going to look differently according to what their personality profile is. And I think for fire leaders, and I've heard this time and time again, they say, the thing about waters that upsets me so much is they never take a stand on anything. Mm-hmm. But I demonstrated this yesterday at lunch with someone. I stuck a straw into a glass of water, and I say, now, which side is the water on? And the lady laughed, and she said, well, it's surrounding the straw. It's on all sides. And I said, exactly. That's the way water sees things. Sure. It surrounds something. So it's very important not to think just because someone is silent or someone is not out waving a flag or, you know, launching the fire or hurling themselves on the funeral pyre that they're not passionately committed. You need to really understand that it's going to show up differently with different people and their different personality types.
That's a great point. And I know next week part of our show discussion will be around the communication styles that you're referring to right now out of your book, The Four Elements of Success. But I do think that's a great insight as we look at an Omega leader and what it means to be passionately committed, because it does look different for different leaders. And I think that's a great piece of information, you know, that I'm going to take away from this, because as a fire myself, you know, I'm in 110%, but maybe the person next to me on the team, you know, might be in at 85%, and I think, well, they're not as passionate about the cause as I am.
Right.
So that's a great point. Thank you for bringing that out.
And there's also a verse in Scripture where they're being told, and I can't remember who was being instructed, but they were being told to purify the instruments through fire in order for them to be sacred and holy and pure. And it said, whatever cannot be purified by fire can also be purified by water. And this is something that I wish different denominations understood. You see this in denominational leadership. There's some people are passionate and they're out there, you know, shouting from the corners and the rooftops, and then there's other people who are quietly serving at the food kitchen, and they're not going to shout somebody down, and so the other people think that they're not passionate about loving God, and that's just not the case. They're showing it in a different way. So the wisdom that can come from knowing how passion is going to show up for your team is very important in order for you to continue to have a team.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of segues right into a question I had. Rick DeFore, who is a consultant or a educational leadership change restructuring of schools, he talks about a concept of loose type leadership, and I think it coincides with what we're talking about. As a fire, I would probably tend more towards tight leadership, which might not bode very well with everyone on my team, especially the other fires. But it reminded me of another common saying in leadership, often quoted by John Maxwell, the idea of a leader with no followers is just a person taking a walk. And as I was reflecting on that and the idea of passion and leadership, I kind of imagine it like energy that needs to be channeled, perhaps, mm-hmm. and directed. So how does a leader prevent that energy, that passion, from consuming her to the point that she has no followers and she's just a girl taking a walk?
Well, see,
great question.
I understand the poetry of that sentence, but I would strongly disagree with it.
Mm.
And here's why. Nelson Mandela took a long walk. Jesus spent a lot of time taking a long walk. Moses spent a lot of time taking a long walk. So I would say that if a leader hasn't taken a long walk alone, I would question whether or not I should follow them, because the self-awareness, and we talked about this in the last couple of shows, the understanding their shadow side, being willing to walk alone. It's Rosa Parks sitting alone on the bus. Many times the things that trigger it, like even the woman Nada, who was the martyr in the Iraqi elections, it's one person that triggers something, and it's them showing their passion in a way. And for Rosa Parks, it was not standing up. It was continuing to sit down.
Sure.
So that's what I think. When you're passionately committed to a cause, a leader, I would say, a leader must be willing to walk alone. And if you have followers, then that's great. But you have to be prepared at any moment to go a different direction if that's what God is calling you to do. And that's what Jesus said when he said, you know, this is what it's going to cost you. I'm not going to be able to feed you. You know, I'm not going to. It's not about food and healing all the time. It's going to cost you dearly. Now, will you wait with me? Will you walk with me?
So are you saying? Are you equating commitment and aloneness? You know, together here, or is that what we're hearing?
I think
or?
When you're passionate about the cause, this is the Wowsie principle, which is another chapter in the book. W-O-W-S-E. Must be willing to lead with or without someone else.
Right.
So I kind of got off on the thing about walking alone, but to your point, how can you not be consumed by the passion? And I think the goal is to be consumed by it, and yet to understand that if you're clear about what the objective is, then you keep being faithful in watering the garden, and the people will come. I was just reading about Stanley Kaplan, who founded Kaplan Test Prep, and he just died last week at the age of 90. And it turns out that he was a wounded warrior in that he applied to medical school and he was turned down 3 times because they already had their quota of Jews. And it so wounded him, because he had all the capacity, that he started tutoring people out of his basement to help empower them. He said it's not right that people should just be based on a quota thing. And so then when someone came and talked about the SAT and whatever, and he said, well, I can teach this. This is how to think. And he now has, his methods have changed the lives of 3 million students. This was a man teaching out of his basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when we're talking about leadership, what people are really seeking is fame. And they want the followers for the ego needs or the ego feeds. And to me, it's, and I guess I'm on this tack tonight, but you must be willing to walk alone and to be consumed by that passion no matter where it takes you, even if it takes you to a cross on a hill.
So maybe in the aloneness, you know, in that walking alone, Alisa, that you were talking about, taking a long walk, you know, maybe it does go to somewhere. But I think I hear what you're saying is that in this aloneness, alone time or aloneness is where the alignment to the commitment becomes intensified.
Very good. And Joseph in prison and you know, Moses walking those sheep trails and being, he was passionately interested in the cause of the Jews, willing enough to kill a guard who was abusing his brother, but he didn't have the method. So this might be Moses was a good example of someone who was passionate, but was not wise.
Yes.
So then, when he saw that burning bush, which I think represents a passion in you that will not die, something that upsets you every time you think about it, every time you feel about it, the burning house style of leadership, or the burning bush style of leadership, you can't seem to let it go. That is God's call to you, that you are the one being called to take action in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so when Moses saw that and he heard the voice speak to him out of it, then he was ready. And at this point, he's not grabbing his, apparently he was quite a large man, a very physically fit man. And now he's so humbled by what has happened to him that he's a reluctant leader.
Yes.
So.
Okay, so I just have this flood of questions for some reason tonight. I think it might have been that moonlight on my on my head earlier. You know, so as a woman in leadership today, you know, I'm faced with a challenge or a decision, and I might have to walk quite a ways by myself. You know, nobody's going to go down that track with me. They don't believe in the cause. They think I'm out in left field. You know, all these different suggestions, whether verbalized or not verbalized, you know, comes across my desk, my path, my day. You know, how do I handle that as a woman in leadership? And, you know, how do I stay focused on that passionate commitment to the cause that I feel like I'm about when it seems like it might be just taking me on a walk?
Yeah, how do you know if you're just taking a walk?
Great question.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I keep thinking of the proverb that says, I went out to water my garden, and behold, the stream has become a river, and the river has run to the sea. This is about a woman who just was watering what was in front of her. And when you look at leadership, it was people doing what was in front of them, including Jesus. You know, here he was, the anointed Son of God, and he didn't immediately have a throne constructed and like what everybody wanted. He just did talk to the person in front of him, and then the next one. And he walked that road and had engaging conversations with people, but he never deviated in what his commitment was, which was to do the will of his Father. So if anybody goes out and says, I want to have a lot of followers, then that would, you know, that would make me nervous.
Yeah.
I think the subtlety of your question, Elisa, what you were getting at is, how do you keep people engaged? And how do you know when you are off on a tangent? You know, you're hearing voices in your head that are not from God.
Sure.
And how do you wrestle with those forces of people pulling you in a different direction?
Yeah. And also, how do you know what would be the difference between being passionately committed versus stubborn? So what
yeah,
if you're
very,
in
yeah,
the
goodness.
Wrong direction
That's
and
right.
you're like just like, oh, I'm going. So how do we manage that check and balance?
Yes. Well, again, and I guess I'm thinking about Proverbs a lot tonight, but wisdom lies in many counselors. So you need to have wise counselors. And if you look at the kings in the Old Testament, they had counselors and prophets would come and talk to them. And nobody sits there and just says, I am the king of the world. That's anointed or appointed by God. So, and there's also a verse, and I'm talking now about the Jerusalem Bible, which is not widely used except maybe with the Catholic denomination, but it's my favorite. And it says, in the greatest number of wise people lies the world's salvation. Now, this is the Old Testament, but wisdom leads to salvation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and wisdom comes from many counselors.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's the answer to my question. But you were speaking about fire, and often passion is associated with fire and with charisma. And as an educational leader, especially being the principal of a school site, leadership, we walk the fine line, or we have to balance the difference between leadership and management.
Mm-hmm.
So we're called to lead change and to be instructional leaders and to impact people's lives, people's futures through the direction of education and curriculum and instruction that's taking place in our site. At the same time, we're called to put out the fires around us of the dog that's loose on the campus, the parent that's upset because they didn't get the student in the class that they wanted, the secretary who's displeased because the teachers are making last-minute requests of them, the tyranny of the urgent.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
How does one keep the tyranny of the urgent from quenching the fire of passionate commitment?
Well, I think it's a great question. And I think that it's having your mission before you at all times. I loved how the priests had they had a thing, an ephod or whatever. I shouldn't be talking about this because I'm not prepared to use the proper terms, but they had the word of God literally on their head, they had it on their lips, and then they had it over their heart, the tribes of Israel, they had it over their hearts. So a physical representation and reminder of your mission and who you answer to, I think, is important. And it can be hourly, and sometimes it can be moment by moment. Mm-hmm. And to understand that wrestling, that is the game that you have chosen to play.
Absolutely. Very
and
powerful.
Don't take it for granted. Question yourself, what if these voices that I'm hearing are really wise or wisdom coming from others?
Right.
Versus what if this is coming from a different side and it's just a distraction?
Right.
And I need to stay committed to this cause.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, we had a discussion too, I think in the last show, about the difference between motivation and volition. Motivation is when you're all rah-rah, cheering the team, you're feeling, you're pumped, man, you're pumped. Let's do it.
Come on.
You know, get it, get her done. That's motivation. Volition is asking yourself the question, what will happen if I do not do this? So that's when it's the willpower and it's the grunting and the groaning and the moaning rather than the cheering that, you know, that comes along with that. To your point, Vicki, about what's the difference between being stubborn? There was a group of people that Jesus really did not like, and it was the hypocrites. And there was another characteristic of them that had to do with their anatomy, and it was they all had stiff necks. Mm-hmm. They were not willing to turn their head in a different direction. They just thought they knew the answers, and I think that's why they missed the baby in the manger, because their necks were too stiff to look from side to side.
Mm-hmm. Very insightful.
So going right now, the economy, the different situation on the business, how can, and I leave this concept of passionate commitment to people that want to start a new venture, a new business, entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a special kind of people, because not everybody can be an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
For the audience, if there's somebody out there that is struggling right now with that,
mm-hmm.
What words of encouragement would you give them to make sure that they have the right passion?
Well,
commitment.
You know, I'm thinking about that. I have a thing in the path that's called the 8 Action Steps to Success, and this will guide you through any endeavor. And one of the things that entrepreneurs need to do is, the first step is get the facts. Because I know several women that are passionate about furniture, and they decide they want to open an antique store, and they're just, you know, their friends are excited and enthusiastic, and they find a place to rent. And, well, if they got the facts, it is the lowest profit item. You are more likely to lose money in an antique store than any single venture that has ever been documented. I mean, there's facts about that. So now, can you be the one that's going to turn the tide against that? Or can you take those energies? Maybe it's the fact that you like being with people. Maybe you like restoring something that's old. Maybe you like valuing things that are hidden treasures. You take that energy and you say, now, okay, that, don't get attached to a venture. If the facts are so, and this is practicality. Now, if God is telling you to do it, no, who am I to say don't do it? But there's wisdom. That's where the wisdom comes in. So the first step is to get the facts. And then you get a goal, and you say, okay, well, I'm going to do this and set benchmarks for, if I'm going to start my business, I'm going to keep my day job, and then I'm going to do this in the evenings and at lunchtime. And then when that becomes, when the income starts flowing in so that I'm making more per hour than I am at my other job, then I go part-time. And then, you know, you can do that in increments. But your entrepreneurs are typically your winds and fires, and they love to leap. And what happens, they get pumped up and they get excited, and, man, the minute they have to sit down with the CPA and look at numbers for 6 hours, and then they don't want to do it anymore. But meanwhile, they, you know, risk their family finances and all of that. So I think you need to really understand your elemental type, because in the wind and fires, you will succeed if you will bring in the water earths and respect them in your venture after you have the facts.
Well, so in the few shows that we've had since we started, since Studio G has partnered with you, Lori Beth, on this effort of defining and educating us on Omega leadership, I can begin to kind of see this this web that we are weaving here of what it really means to become an Omega leader. You know, there's a lot involved in that, so much that you've written 14 books about it, really, because you're talking about the path, you're talking about the four elements of success, you're talking about teams. And so I think as we continue these discussions on leadership and women in leadership in particular, which is one of our passions, that I believe at Studio G we're passionately committed to finding ways to serve women in leadership. And we've got about 4 minutes left tonight, and I'd like you to spend a couple of those, two or three of those, talking about a woman that you've written a lot about. I think you have some passion around this woman, and a lot of it is your own passion for art, and you are an artist yourself in many ways, at many levels. But this summer you spent some time in Santa Fe and up near her homestead. And in fact, in your book, in this chapter about passionate commitment, you talk about Georgia O'Keeffe.
Right.
And she spent some time out of the year, 6 months or so, by herself to see color. We're going to close this show with you talking about one of your favorite artists and about what it means to be passionately committed as a woman.
Yes. There's a poster of her, and she's on the back of a motorcycle. And this younger guy she's on the back of a motorcycle, and this younger guy is getting ready to, you can see him kicking the kickstand off, and they're heading off into these rolling, beautiful mountains. And he's facing the road, and she has a grin on her face. She's got a bandana, and she's looking back at the camera, and the poster caption is, "Women Who Rode Away." And I love that because she literally took her art so seriously that she gave it the space it deserved. She gave it the space it needed. And so, you know, as women, we're very committed to our families. We're very committed to our spouses, our children, our mothers, our sisters, our brothers. We have a fragile child within us, and that is our calling and our gift. And we need to passionately commit time and energy to nurture that gift within us as if it were a child, instead of throwing it in the corner and giving it a bone now and then. Every woman needs a place of her own, and it's interesting, we started out about passionate commitment, and we're ending up about a woman who was willing to go into the desert alone to make a space for living her gift. And evidently that is the theme that the Lord wanted us to have for this show. And I just also want to add that when I think about passionate commitment, we're sitting here in a studio that has no air conditioning, because in San Diego you don't need air conditioning except when you do, which is in August, and they have all generously turned the fan on me, and we committed to do this show Thursday night whether we had listeners or not, and it seems like every now our listenership is doubling, and you know, we're watering our plants, and the truth is we would do it if nobody listened or not. We would do it for ourselves. We would do it because we think that's what the Lord wants. And so we're glad that people are indeed listening now in the hundreds. Our river flows to the sea. So blessings to you all as you think about the Omega leader. He said, "I am the Alpha," which is the beginning, "and the Omega," which is the fulfilling, transcendent completion. And I'd like to dedicate the rest of the show to a very dear friend, Catherine Kellison McLaughlin, who filmed our Path for Teens video, who kayaked over to Jesus yesterday at 2:30 after a 4-year valiant battle with colon cancer. So we are missing her dearly tonight and thinking about her having wine with him at a great banquet and telling him some joke that will probably make even Jesus blush. So this is for Catherine and for all women out there who love the Lord and are passionately committed to living a full and beautiful life.